This is episode 58 of the Next Year Now podcast.
Hi, I'm Adrienne Finkel. If you're looking for inspiration in life and want to design a life that truly matters, then you need to start listening to the Next Year Now podcast with my friend Tom Hefner.
And not that emotions are bad. They're not. They have their place. They need to stay in their lane. Emotions are our driver. That's the reason we would do the hard thing. But we need to steer with logic, with our mind. We need to make well-reasoned decisions going forward. Steer with that.
Welcome to the Next Year Now podcast with Tom Hefner. Tom believes that if you really want to thrive at work and in life, then every day purposeful habits and practices are vital. The Next Year Now podcast will not only help you identify and integrate these habits into your daily life, but also bring you key insights and lessons from some of the most successful people in their fields. And here is your host, Tom Hefner.
Hello, and welcome to the podcast devoted to helping you thrive at work and in life. The topic of habits and practices is always front and center in our discussion, but we also explore how we use these habits and practices to improve our personal development, productivity, creativity, health and well-being, business and entrepreneurship. We're coming to the end of the year, and with that comes New Year's resolutions. I saved this episode because this might be the best thing, the most important thing you learn all year, and it's something you can use to kick off your new year in the best possible way. And that's because today's guest is Andrew Whitman, an expert in resilience. He's also the founder of the Mental Toughness Training Center, and he's the author of the just released 7 Secrets of Resilience for Parents. You know, I can't predict what 2019 holds for you, but I can predict that it's going to involve some adversity. So you better be ready to bounce back and push through those tough times when they do come. And today's episode is all about helping you and your family, your children, do just that. In our conversation, I'll be asking Andrew to discuss his definition of resilience and what that looks like in action. And it's a little bit different than some of the other traditional, more conventional definitions of resilience. The story of his own path to resilience. The most effective habits and practices we can cultivate to become more resilient in our own lives and as parents to our children. Book recommendations to help you wire your brain for resilience and so much more. Before we start today, I want to tell you about something important and different going forward. This year and next, I have one really, really big goal, and that is I want to connect with and have a meaningful conversation with each and every one of you, my listeners. And whether you listen to every episode or maybe you've just listened to one, I want to chat with you. I want to know what you're interested in learning more about, and more importantly, I want to learn how I can better serve you and help you thrive in life. So please, please do me a favor, head over to our Facebook page. It's at facebook.com/nextyearnow. That's just NextYearNow. And drop me a comment or personal message through Messenger. We can chat via email, or hopefully we can hop on a Zoom call or a Skype call, but let's make it happen. And let's make 2019 the best year ever for you. Andrew Whitman, PhD, is a United States Marine Corps Infantry Combat Veteran, hoorah, a former police officer and federal agent. As a special agent for the U.S. Capitol Police, Whitman led the security detail for Nancy Pelosi and has personally protected Hillary Clinton, King Abdullah of Jordan, Benjamin Netanyahu of Israel, Sir Elton John, as well as Fortune 20 CEOs. This guy's the real deal. And as a security contractor for the State Department, he taught high-threat diplomatic security to former Navy SEALs, Marines, Army Rangers, and Special Forces alike. He's the founder of the Mental Toughness Training Center. This is a leadership consultancy specializing in strategies on how to take control of your thoughts, feelings, attitudes, and actions, especially under pressure. He's also the author of the books Ground Zero Leadership, CEO of You, and Amazon's number one new parenting release, 7 Secrets of Resilience for Parents. This was just released last week. You got to check it out. I promise you, it's one of the best books you will read this year. Andrew lives in South Carolina with his wife, Kim, and their three children. Andrew, thank you for joining us today and welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm super excited, Tom.
Likewise.
And thanks for the oorah, man.
Yeah. Listen, I got a long history of military service in my family. My father was a Marine for 27 years. He always says it was the best job he ever had. Everything else after that was downhill.
I don't disagree with any of that.
Look, if you're a listener of the show, a friend, or even a family member, then you know that I'm a fan of resilience. It's such an important life skill for all of us to develop and get better at. You know, I can't predict your future. I can't know what will happen to you. But what I do know is that you will face adversities in life at some point, guaranteed. So it's super important that you, that me, that all of us, that we learn how to bounce back and push through those adversities. And that's what we're going to be discussing today with Andrew. I'm so excited to hear from Andrew, and I know you are too, but first, let's get to know Andrew a bit more. Andrew, tell us about yourself. How did your journey in life lead you to focusing on resilience and mental performance?
I know it seems like everybody in the business that, you know, that we do, like the speaker, I'll say this, speakers and authors, mm-hmm. Our subject is based on the biggest problem in our life, right?
So, yeah, that's right. Right.
So when I was in high school, I was the fat kid and I got bullied. I was 5'3", like 185 pounds, you know, and my nickname was Beach Ball, right? Beach Ball. And then I know, right? And my mom and dad were missionaries. So I grew up in Australia, but we were never allowed to fight back as missionaries. So then I would just cry and then that would attract more bullies. And I, you know, and then I turned to food for my comfort and then just ballooned up and, I just wanted to get control of my life. I didn't want to live in fear and anxiety, and I wanted to get control of my body first off. So I enlisted in the Marine Corps. Where else would you go to get these mental toughness tools, right? So, and that's really what the start of this lifelong obsession of how does the human machine work, body, mind, and emotions, and how can I get all three of those things to work together to help me instead of working against me? And it seems like most people, you know, those three things don't work together. They actually work against each other, and it's really to our detriment. So that's really, you know, how I started focusing on mental performance and resilience, mental toughness. It started out in the Marine Corps.
Maybe help us get clear on what resilience is and isn't. Share how you define resilience.
Yeah, and I'll just say the conventional definition of resilience is that you bounce back from something bad happening to you, or, you know, you work through a problem, right? So I didn't like that because that puts you back on your heels. The mindset is that I bounce back from bad stuff. So what I did is I take a proactive approach to resilience, and it's really, I call it mental toughness, right? So, and that's what you said when you're talking about really our mission statement at the Mental Toughness Training Center is getting control. And I even say complete control, which people are like, well, you can't ever get complete control. But that doesn't keep me from working at it, right? Complete control of my thoughts, feelings, attitudes, and actions, and especially under pressure. Because when you're in the pressure cooker, that's when it goes crazy. So resilience for me, my definition is I'm proactively taking control of my thoughts, feelings, attitudes, and actions, right, on a daily basis. So when it does hit the fan, I'm good to go. It's just another day in the park.
Well, so to what degree can we learn to proactively take control? I mean, are we limited by our predisposition or our genetics when it comes to this style of resilience?
Right. I'm going to say no, because if you look at, and we know this, everybody that, I mean, you hear this all the time, that kids are resilient, and we all know that kids are resilient. Like they don't know that they're not supposed to be resilient. So like stuff happens to them, they just bounce back. So we're born with it. It's in our DNA, in our genome. It is in your genetics. What happens somewhere along the line, we stop, utilizing it. And I look at resilience and mental toughness as a physical skill. Right. If you practice it every day and you build the habit of that physical skill, it's like driving the car. Right. When I got three teenagers. Well, two of them are, you know, in college now. But when they were first learning to drive the car, everything was herky jerky. Right. Because you're just trying to figure out how to do it. Man, I'm telling you, within 2 weeks, they're fiddling with the radio, you know, booch, boo, you know, hanging back. And they're doing all kind of, right, because now they're automatically driving the car. Right. That they practice the skill enough that it automatically happens. And that's really what I believe is the sweet spot with resilience, that you practice it enough that it automatically happens. And when you're squeezed under pressure, you're just being what you be.
Now, what are some of the things that you think kind of grind that out of us or pound that out of us? Because at some point, like you said, like kids, when they're young, they all have that kind of ability just to be like, whatever, I don't care. Like, I'll just keep going forward.
Yeah. And I'm going to, this is where, you know, the ground zero of all this is really it's self-esteem. Right. So, and I'll say it like this. So like, if you look at the numbers of self-esteem, the numbers of 2-year-olds that have a healthy self-esteem, that they accept themselves, and it's 85%, which, you know, that if you hang out with a 2-year-old, they accept you no problem for who you are, and they accept themselves. There's no hangups. Right. So by the time we get to age 15, that number goes down to 5%.
5%?
Yes, 5%. So I know that 95 out of every 100 teenagers, right, need help. They don't have a healthy self-esteem. And then for adults, it's really still by the age 24, after you get through all the college and all that, till the grave, it's still only 30%. So that means 7 out of every 10 adults have an issue with self-esteem. So the number one fear of all humans and social animals is rejection. Right. And so conversely, the number one need is acceptance. But if you haven't accepted yourself, you're always looking for that acceptance from an outside source. So here's what happens is I'm looking, what's that country song, looking for love in all the wrong places. I know that's old, but I'm old. Right. I'm giving that power of acceptance. I'm looking for it from an outside source, which I know 70% of adults can't give it to me. And this is why kids have so much time and hard time in school, because 95% of their peers can't give them acceptance because they're looking for it for themselves. Right. So, and that's where the downward spiral begins to happen, is we're always looking for acceptance. So I change my behavior in order to gain that acceptance. When I do that, I make poor decisions that would put me in a bad spot. And then I can't, now I have to bounce back from that bad spot. But pretty soon we get desensitized to it and we just live in this bad spot because that's the new normal.
Well, I want to pull the thread on, okay, so kind of how they become less resilient. So I'm going to get to that in just a moment.
Yeah.
And we're going to dive into your book. So we'll get there. But before I do, I kind of want to take a step back and say, you know, and I think, you know, look, if you're a parent, if you're a leader, or really just someone who wants to learn how to be more resilient, then just right now, stop what you're doing. Take a break from your workout, turn up the volume if you're driving in your car right now. Just do me a favor, pay close attention, because I think this next question for Andrew is going to be a game changer. Andrew, I think that if we want to raise resilient children, then we have to be resilient, right? We have to demonstrate that behavior. So before we get into what makes children resilient, I want to take a step back and say, what are the 2 or 3 most effective habits or practices that we can cultivate right now to become more resilient?
Right. No, you're 100% right on. And that's why, like, it, and I know we're not talking about the book yet, but the book is focused on the parents, not the kids. I'm not worrying about raising resilient kids. The kids are resilient when they come out the birth canal, right? It's the parents that are not resilient. So we need to absolutely focus on ourselves, because this is how the human machine works. And you know this, man. We learn mostly by imitation. Monkey see, monkey do, right? We model whatever behavior is modeled for us. We imitate it. So, and we know that if you're a parent, you know, it's not what I, you know, you do what I say, not what I do, right? That doesn't work. You always do what the parents do. So if you want your kids to be resilient, then you have to be resilient. And so let's focus on ourselves first, right? And then by really osmosis, if you will, the natural learning process will take place and you don't even have to worry about it. Your kids will be on the right path. So here's the first thing, what I call it, right? The first thing I call is CEO of you, right? So then this is what we do. I do it for, you know, corporate audiences, for professional athletes, for coaches of professional and high level college teams, right? CEO of you, who's running your own boardroom? And here's your job as CEO of you. And this will make you more resilient. It's just to be aware of who's running the boardroom in your own personal life. And your board members are your body, mind, and emotions. Right. So when you have a boardroom meeting with yourself, I always ask who usually wins the vote, body, mind, or emotions. And then everyone's like, right. And I'll say it like this, kind of take the pressure off. Yeah. Right. And we wish it was not. But who should be is the mind. Right. So being resilient, the first thing is to get control of your boardroom. And not that emotions are bad. They're not. They have their place. They need to stay in their lane. Emotions are our driver. That's the reason we would do the hard thing. But we need to steer with logic, with our mind. We need to make well-reasoned decisions going forward. Steer with that. And so, and then I'll say this. The body is the third member of the boardroom. It is the swing vote. So when I talk about mental toughness and resilience, and if you parents or anybody really, if you want to be have the mind running the boardroom, the first thing you have to do is dominate your body. You have to get your body to stop doing what you feel like doing and make it side and agree with your mind in order to overturn the vote of the emotion.
What's that look like? Well, what's an example of how you'd operationalize that?
Okay, so first thing is, we all know this, the empirical data shows this, 6 to 8 hours of sleep every day. Now, people be like, well, I can't get 8 hours of sleep or six. You can, right? You don't have to do it all at one time. Really, before the Industrial Revolution, we slept in two blocks. We had two sleeps, the first sleep, then we got up at midnight, and that's where the midnight snacks started, and we fire up the wood stove, and then we went back to bed, and we had the second sleep. But you got to get 6 to 8 hours of sleep. That's the first. You own your sleep. Nobody else owns it but you. It's your body, right? The second thing is make good nutritional food choices. We don't need anybody to tell us when we're making a bad food choice. We already know, right?
So it's not. I don't think this Oreo is the right choice right now.
Yeah. Even though you want to grab it. See, that's what I did when I was the fat kid. I would grab Oreos because it made me feel better. Now the body and the emotions are siding together. What I know in the long term, the Oreo did not make me feel better. Like carrot sticks would make me feel better. Maybe not right at this second, but as we're going down the road, carrot sticks would make me feel better. And then the third thing is you own your fitness activity. Now, I'm not saying you have to go do a Tough Mudder run or join, grab a sledgehammer and pound tractor tires, but you got to get some physical activity every day. Like then, and if you don't really, you literally, which I would argue this, but if you don't have time, park your car furthest away from the spot in your office and walk, and then take the stairs and not the elevator, right? You do things, stop eating lunch at your desk, go for a walk, right? There's tons of ways that you, but those three things is the first thing that you have to do to get your body under control.
Well, and I would argue that we all have time. We just don't prioritize it. You know,
right.
For sure, there's probably some people out there saying, no, sure. Look, really, I don't have time. But for the vast majority of us, we just have to prioritize that time. Before we got on the call here, I was just talking about how, and if you're a longtime listener, then you know, then we just went to a podcast schedule of once every 2 weeks instead of once a week. And in part why I did that, as painful as it was, because I love doing this podcast. I get a lot of, great conversations and feedback. And I knew that, going to a once every 2 week cadence was not going to be great for growing the podcast. But I prioritized that time because I said, listen, I need to get in better shape. I need to make this a priority in my life. And we can all do it. Sometimes it means making tough choices, though.
Right. It's triage. And I always say time's the great equalizer. Every human on the planet has the exact same amount of time every day. You have 24 hours.
Mm-hmm.
And how you use it or waste it, invest it, it's all up to you. And that dictates your results.
Well, look, let's dive deeper into your book because I can't wait to read this book from cover to cover. But so your new book, Seven Secrets of Resilience for Parents. As parents, what are some of the secrets to resilience? Like, what can we do to help our kids learn and develop, these cognitive tools of resilience, if you will?
Right. And again, first thing is that you have to first become that and then model that. So mm-hmm. You have to adopt the habit, if you will, of the first thing is being a critical thinker. You have to slow down that cognitive. I'll say it like this. I say this in corporate, right? Do you have a thought process or is it just a jungle up there? And this is where resilience messes up, right? Because it's usually just a jungle up there. When the emotions are running the boardroom, it's just a jungle up in my head between my ears. What I have to do is order that process. So I like to think of thinking as a physical skill, a step-by-step process. Now, you talked about my bio. I'm also a firearms instructor, marksmanship instructor. When we're teaching law enforcement, there's literally a four-step process of how to draw the weapon and present it when you're on the range or if, God forbid, you're in a use of force situation. Four-step process. If you never touched a weapon before, we break it down to four steps, right? And then pretty soon you get to, as you do it over and over again, just like driving the car, it all just becomes like habit, like a golf swing, right? A golfer has step by step. When you're first learning golf, it's like grip and stance,
yep.
Right? The mechanics of the swing. And then pretty soon you just swing the club. If you think of thinking the same way of what are the four steps, I order my thoughts and then I build that habit, if you will, an autopilot program of that's how I always think my thoughts, then you don't have to worry about are you being resilient? It's just who you are.
Mm-hmm. Well, look, Andrew, I want to ask you about a challenge that I have with my kids. So because my wife would be like, look, you had this expert on the show and you didn't ask him. we have three kids. And so they span 10 years. My oldest two they're boys and they're all boys. So like they can be a handful at times. And one of the challenges that my wife and I have and I suspect that we're not alone. I hope that we're not alone in this, is that is maintaining our poise, right? Maintaining our poise and our calm during heated arguments. It's like we forget we're parents and we just lose our collective freaking mind. What's one habit or practice we can do to help avoid these heated blowups with our boys?
Right. And so that's what I call being an emotional reactor. What I want to do is move to the first responder column. And this is how you channel the 911 operator. Right. So imagine if you called 911 and you're like, the house is on fire. And they're like, oh, my gosh, the house is on fire. What if they were emotional reactor? Right. We're in big trouble. No. What do they do? They're like, 911, what's your emergency? And then they begin asking questions and taking down, gathering information so they could come up with a plan of response, which they pass on to the firefighters or the EMS or the police officers so that they actually have a plan when they get there. Right. They're just not reacting emotionally to an emergency. Now, as a parent, what I want to do is move myself from the emotional reactor column into the first responder column and channel the 911 operator, right? So if you get a 60 on a test, all right, that's the really, what's the emergency, right? 911, I got a 60 on the test. Okay, what's the emergency? And then we begin to gather information, find out exactly what happened, where the breakdown was. Here's the course correction, how we can fix it going forward. You know what? Because I can't change the 60. You yelling about it as a parent is not going to change the 60. So what, right? That's not going to, right? You can't change it. This is the difference between like coaching and therapy, right? Coaching is, listen, I can't fix anything that happened up till right now. Whatever that injury was, rub some dirt on it, right? That's the Marine Corps. Rub some dirt on it, drink some water. Now, what can we do going forward to fix it, right? So I'm not going to spend any time on freaking out about what happened in the past. What I want to do is learn from it. After action report, if you will, find out where the failure was and then learn from it so it doesn't happen again. And then you're not freaking out. All we're doing is trying to, you know, make the course correction, right? So 911 operator, what's your emergency, instead of freaking out?
One thing I think, you know, resilience is, it's in the news a lot, right? I mean, you see it in pop culture, you see it in psychology, you see it in the fields that we work in. What's, you know, what do people misunderstand or what do they get wrong about resilience, you think?
Yeah, but here's the number one thing that I come across. And then again, this is just like in our in-house, you know, research, because I'm a student of human behavior. People have this kind of misconception of resiliency that it's almost mystical, that it's not tangible, and that you either have it or you don't. Mm. Right. And so we just excuse that out if we don't have it. And it is literally a physical skill. It's just a skill that you drill and practice every day. And then pretty soon, it's like it just happens automatically and you don't even realize that you're doing it.
You're a muscle right? memory.
Right. So that's why people that are resilient, people look at me and they're like, you're just a freak of nature. I'm like, no, I'm not. I'm Forrest Gump, man. I learned the process of how to order my thoughts and become a first responder, have my mind running the boardroom, and I just stick to that process. And it's not long. I keep it down to like 4 steps because humans can't go do more than 4 steps. If you can't remember what the steps are, you definitely can't.
You're
do
in
it.
Trouble.
Yeah. So it's very simple. I strip it down to like, it's almost so easy that people are like, that can't. No, come on, man. There's got to be more to it than that. No, here's the secret is that you actually have to do the work of doing it every day. You just got to do it.
So one of my favorite quotes, people, you know, if you're a longtime listener, you know, this is from Peter Drucker. You know, what gets measured gets managed. You got to do it every day. You got to measure it every day. I literally, since I've started my fitness and nutrition plan, I log every single calorie that I eat. I log my macros. I log my, you know, my fitness. So I 100% agree with that.
Yeah, I mean, that's the first when I personally coach like CEOs that come to me that are just so stressed out. And I mean, if you look in the news, CEOs are getting fired every day. Their health is going down the tubes. I mean, they're in the hot seat. So they're super stressed. First thing that they have to do is give me a handwritten log. I don't even want it on an app. You handwrite a log. You take a picture of it, of everything that you ate, what your nutrition and fitness was, and what your sleep schedule was. And if they won't do that every day, I will not coach them.
Well, it means they're not committed, or at least not prioritizing it.
No, and then and my coaching, it's a waste of my time and it's a waste of their money, right? So, and this is what I would encourage parents, like you said, measure it and then manage it. Because this is human nature. We like to I'll say it this way. Guys my age, I'm 51. Guys my age, we don't like to go to the doctor and find out what our blood sugar is. Because then I know I can't have that donut. You know what I mean? But if I don't know what it is, if I live in delusion, I don't really know what it is, I don't actually measure it, then I could have the donut. You know what I mean? So it's like a rationalization if I don't know what I'm actually facing.
Yeah. Hear no evil, see no evil. Hear no evil, see no evil. You know, before I move on to some questions not directly related to your book, you know, what else from your book would you like us to know?
Yeah, I'll say this, from start to finish, you're going to get new stuff. There's so much packed in there, but it's a field manual. Don't just expect to sit down and just read it and then roll on, right? So get a, grab a highlighter, write down your notes, and practice. Even if you own, there's seven secrets. If you only get two or three of them and you adopt those, you're going to get like 90% of the way there. I like to use Babe Ruth as my example, right? He struck out twice as many times as he hit home runs, and his lifetime batting average was only .342, which means he was wrong 2/3 of the time. You don't have to be perfect. There's no pressure. If you just are right 1/3 of the time as a parent, you get this down, you're going to be a Hall of Famer. We'll still be talking about how great you are 100 years from now.
All right. Well said. I like that. Well, look, we're getting ready to wrap up. But before we do, I want to dive into one of my favorite parts of the show. And this is where we focus on the topic of reading. This is a true, true golden habit in my mind. Andrew, I want you to think about the books you've really loved over the years. What are the two or three books that have impacted you the most?
This is such a great question, Tom, and I'm an avid reader. It was hard to pick because I read, 60 books a year, easy, right? So, but the two that I think that really were game changers for me was the first one was Change Your Brain, Change Your Life by Daniel Amen. There's just, it just goes through with, if you read that book and you buy and you're a true believer of, how the brain works and it interacts with the rest of your body and your emotions, I mean, you'll never go back to worrying about, should I eat this donut or not? Should I go do fitness or not? Should I get my sleep or not? Should I have that, second drink or not? Right. You don't ever have to worry about it again. Right. And then I'm a student of human behavior, but I want to look at how the human machine works. Right. And so I went all the way back to the beginning of time with this book called The Annals of the World by James Usher. He was born in the late 1580s, and his book was written in Latin.
Oh, wow.
Came out in 1650. It's huge. It's like double phone book, right? So, and it got translated into English in 2007. And it literally takes a look at every document that was available to him at the time and put a timeline from really, the beginning of when humans were on the planet, and then goes all the way through like the Roman Empire, the Greeks, the Persians, going backwards, right? And it's funny because there's really not, when you see it in that perspective, you understand that for 10,000 years, we've been doing the same thing over and over again, expecting different results. And of course, what do we call that?
Insanity,
right? But so what it does is it makes it so I don't judge anybody. I'm like, look, man, this is, as long as humans have been recording their history, this has been an issue, right? This is nothing new. I don't judge you. All of us would do the same. There's nothing uncommon to all mankind, no matter how far back in our history we go. So again, for me, that was another game changer book.
Final question. What's next for you? What are you working on now that you're excited about? I know you have this book out right now, so you might be just, eyes deep in promoting and going around and talking about it. But if we think after that, like what's something that you're excited about that's coming up?
Well, and I'll tell you, this book, it's not just, here's my target for this book is to get it into 3.5 million parents' hands. If I can get it there, then I know that within 3 years from now, there'll be 7 million to 10 million kids that operate this way in resilience and mental toughness, right? And with the minds running the boardroom. And then think about that, the next generation, I'm looking at 30 million people. So the next workforce, so you're looking at 2040, we have 30 million entering the workforce that are all resilient minded, critical thinkers with emotional intelligence. And I tell you, it's so huge in our society right now. It's like people can't even sit down and have a conversation without it devolving into like insulting and just meanness. And right. So this really, I have nothing other than that, right? I'm like totally sold out, hashtag all in, burn the boats. I need to get this into at least 3.5 million parents' hands.
Man, I'm going to do my part.
I know, and I appreciate it.
I got some, I've ordered some for Christmas presents for family members and friends. So,
awesome.
Well, look, Andrew, thank you so much for joining us today. This has been a fantastic conversation. I always love to geek out on resilience, and this was, this was no exception. So thank you so much.
Yeah, I'm not even going to take offense that you just called me a geek, but that's totally cool, man.
Before we close out today, I want to remind you of my one very big goal going forward this year and next, and that is I want to connect with and have a meaningful conversation with each and every one of you, my listeners. I want to know what you're interested in learning more about, and more importantly, I want to learn how I can serve you better and how to help you thrive in life. So please do me a favor and head over to our Facebook page. It's at facebook.com/nextyearnow and drop me a comment or a personal message through Messenger. We can chat via email, or hopefully we can hop on a Zoom or Skype call, but let's make it happen and make 2019 the best year ever for you. You can connect with Andrew online through his website, getwarriortough.com, and on Twitter with his handle, @warriortoughphd. All the links and resources Andrew and I discussed can be found at the page created just for this episode. You'll find it all at nextyearnowpodcast.com/58. And finally, just a reminder, if you like the show and enjoy learning from our guests each week, please consider giving us a rating and review on iTunes. It really helps us stay relevant and findable by listeners like you. That's it for today. I'll see you next time.